This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today with Julian Merrick of IBM.
Hello, very nice to see you today, Ian. I'm the Vice President for IT Security for IBM across Europe.
We're here at the Corsham Institute, where we've been talking about their program to help retrain servicemen who are leaving, to give them cybersecurity skills, to engage them with employers. Yep. Can you give us a view of where IBM fits into that model?
This is part of a corporate social responsibility initiative that we originally launched in the US. We've trained over 1,000 veterans in the US, and we've trained now 100 in the UK. We work with the Corsham Institute, who provide the facilities for us to run the training. We work with Salute My Job, which is, again, a not-for-profit charity, who are focused on helping veterans find employment. They help us find candidates to come to the course, and then we provide an instructor who runs a course for a week on either our intelligence platform, i2, or on our cyber analytics platform, Curator. And at the end of the course, the student leaves, as long as they pass the test, with an industry-recognized certification and badge on one of those two products.
What is it in particular with service veterans that appeals to you for these courses?
I'm a veteran myself, although 20 years ago I left the army. But I believe passionately that veterans bring a lot of soft skills to cybersecurity. If you think about what happens during a cyber incident, we need people who can remain calm in a situation where people's hair is on fire and they're wrestling with potentially quite complex situations with major business impact on the organization. We need people who can condense complex situations down and brief it to senior people in a succinct way and provide those senior leaders with a few options as to what decisions they should be making and some recommendations based on that. We need people who are familiar with writing, using standard operating procedures when they're working in an incident, but also have the initiative that when the incident develops in a particular direction and the standard operating procedures don't quite cover that eventuality, that they can use their initiative and do that. We're also looking for people who can train in this space as well. So, for instance, one of the exciting things about cybersecurity is it is constantly evolving. And so even those people who are cyber professionals today need constant training to keep their skills up to date and understand what the latest tools and technologies and attack vectors are from the adversaries. So we need good trainers, and there are lots of fantastic, excellent trainers in the services who just need to be given the content and then can deliver that. But I think there are many, many different roles that service leavers veterans can go into in the cyber space. And for me, what we're trying to do is open people's eyes to the opportunities for them as services leavers, but also to engage with employers to say, here is a group of people who you would perhaps not naturally have looked at as cyber employees, but they have a lot of soft skills that are very relevant to the challenges that you face.
Some of those soft skills can be challenging to employers, not just line managers, but the line manager's boss's boss's boss, for example. They're not used to people just suddenly getting up and making decisions. The organization has a process, but this individual short-circuits them because it's the right thing to do. How do you find working with veterans in those early stages of them joining commercial companies, of dealing with their frustration that people don't understand why they've done it, but also trying to get them to adjust their way of thinking without losing those soft skills?
As an employer ourselves, we employ hundreds of veterans in the UK. We set up a network in 2009 to support veterans working at IBM. And one of the things that we do is where somebody joins from the services, we offer them a buddy from the same service, Navy, Army or Air Force, and ideally who left at a similar stage of their career to help them through that transition. I was very lucky when I joined IBM. I happened to join into my team of whatever it was, 15 people. I joined with another army officer who was at a similar stage of his career. We joined together and we went through the transition together. We turned up 5 minutes early for every meeting and were mystified and frustrated by the fact that everybody else turned up on time and left their books and laptops there and went and got a coffee and the meeting started 5 or 10 minutes late all the time. I mean, that's a commercial culture clashing with a military culture. And if you're the only person going through that on your own, that can be really frustrating and mystifying. Because often if you're leaving the services, depending on what stage of your career, you're changing your job, you're changing your social life, and you're probably changing your accommodation as well. Anything we can do to help people through that transition, I think, is really important.
Many of them leave with a reserve liability. And in cyber in particular, there's a huge emphasis on bringing these people in, making sure that we not only re-educate them when they leave to what civilian companies want, but actually we retain every essential skill we can for the cyber core. But that then has another side, and that means deployment. And today we're in a position where our standing army is shrinking constantly, and it's being supplemented continuously by reservists. How disruptive does that have the risk of being, particularly in a small team, where you suddenly lose somebody that might be for 2 weeks, but eventually ends up being maybe 10 or 12, depending on operational matters?
This was another reason why we set up this network in 2009. We were very focused on communicating with our first line managers to make sure that they understood that we are supporters of the Armed Forces Covenant. We have for many, many years been heavily committed to supporting reservists. We provide military extra leave for people who are doing their annual training and stuff like that. What we ran was an internal communications program where we asked reservists to write up what they were doing when they came back, and ideally if they could take a few photographs so that we could put those into our online magazine. What we were trying to do there was communicate with the first line managers that we do support this, we have internal HR processes that support people deploying, and it is happening on a regular basis, and the company supports it and can cope with it. Because I felt very strongly that most managers lead a team of 12, 15 people, and if one person turns up with a letter in their hand and says, I'm being deployed, that could be 10% of your workforce is just suddenly evaporated for you don't know how long for. So helping people recognize that this does happen and that the company supports it was really important. We've run articles where we had people who were deployed to the Gulf working in a naval operations center supporting the anti-piracy programs. We had people who were deployed over the Olympics supporting the anti-aircraft, you know, airspace control during the Olympics. We've had people doing aid to the civil community in lots of different countries. And so we've tried to publicize that. We actually had one guy who was a Royal Marine Lieutenant Colonel, I believe he still is, and he was deployed and he took command of one of the camps in Afghanistan for 6 months. We've tried to publish that internally. We've also actively supported Wear Your Uniform to Work Day. We've had very good support from our chief executives. So we've done photograph opportunities on Wear Your Uniform to Work Day where our UK CEO has met with some of our reservists, and we've used that to publicize this and make it more visible across the organization.
One of the things I've begun to notice with US companies is many of the CISOs that I talk to have a military background. It seems to be a natural gravitation at the moment that security matters. Let's go find somebody from the armed forces, bring them in. Not as prevalent in the UK, and far from prevalent when we look at Europe and other parts of the world. What are the challenges of bringing those people in? Because, of course, they're used to issuing an instruction and it being carried out. As you said, they're used to, here's the time the meeting starts. Well, everybody's there 5 minutes early. And, of course, in civilian life, that might be an hour late sometimes.
Nobody's ever an hour late in IBM, I can assure you.
But how do you help them move across? Because there's a difference between taking somebody who's been at the bottom of the chain of command and bringing them in, and taking somebody who's used to being the chain of command.
It's down to both sides. I've personally been involved in, you know, 1-star and 2-star leaders leaving the services and joining IBM, and they leave a staff car and an office and an ADC and they come and work for IBM. They have to be ready for that culture change, and we have to work with them as well to support that. In terms of the CISO, I haven't seen it happen as much in Europe. What I have seen is particularly in the intelligence space, a lot of the financial services community have hired people with an intelligence background to go in to lead the threat and risk management space. There's now a whole community of those kinds of people, particularly in the city, who have that kind of background. I think as a company, we're working to help people through that transition. We recognize the transition. We offer a buddy to help them through that. But I think it's important also, if you're interviewing for that kind of role, it's probably going to be easier if you're a former veteran yourself to have that kind of discussion and recognize the cultural differences and be able to test whether the individual is ready for that move.
One of the big challenges for organizations is that not everybody leaves the services fit and healthy. They may have a physical disability. It's easy for employers to see, and they can talk about it and understand what's required. However, mental disability is becoming a major cause of people leaving the armed forces, from depression to PTSD to alcoholism. You know, these are the major issues. They're not visible. They're very hard for people to often understand in a civilian life, where they're not commonplace. You've come across, obviously, a lot of people in your time. IBM's dealt with a lot of people who have had issues here. How did you put in place programs to be able to support them when they suddenly need to be away for 2, 3, 4 weeks getting some treatment as opposed to just being deployed?
I haven't been involved in any specific situations, but what we did do is we worked with the part of the MOD that was set up around wounded, injured and sick. And so one of the things that we did was we invited a group of them down to IBM Hursley, and we introduced them to some of our disabled employees. These were people who had lost a leg through a motorbike accident, or blind employees or whatever, and just introduced them so that they could understand that there are people out there in the civilian workforce with similar disabilities and who have made careers for themselves in the IT industry. We did that a couple of times to really help people across that mental step where my career has come to an end. I was planning to be in the services, and for whatever reason they were wounded in Afghanistan or Iraq, and therefore their careers had to completely change. But what we wanted to share with them is other people go through that in the civilian world as well, and help them see that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
A lot of employers, particularly mid-sized companies, struggle to understand what they can offer into the Armed Forces Covenant. They might want to do it, but they're really not sure how they get started. Could you just share some tips that they should do, or some thoughts for them on getting involved?
For me, the buddy offering is an important one, and I guess to a certain extent we can do that because we're a large organization. But I think that's a really important way of helping people through that transition. Giving people the space and the time, and I guess also recognizing my personal experience was I went on training early on in my civilian career, but I felt I was learning different things from some of the other students. So, you know, I went on courses where maybe I was being taught about how to present. Well, I'd been training hundreds of students on Arctic warfare courses in the military, so I was pretty confident at standing up and presenting. But I was picking up lots of other things about how do you behave in a civilian environment, this business card thing. What is that? And how do you use that? There's lots of other things that you pick up in the process. So I think it's being sympathetic to that. And I think having an open and honest dialogue. If the commitment is there from the SME that they want to engage in the process, they just need to have an open dialogue about, so how does it feel? What are the things that you would find helpful to the services leaver to help them through that process?
Julian, thank you for your time today.
No, thank you.